Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jacob Hacker, who's the director of the Institution for Social and Policy Studies at Yale University, where he's also a professor of political science, an expert on the politics of U.S. health and social policy. He is the co-author of Off Center, The Republican Revolution and the Erosion of American Democracy. And his latest book with Paul Pearson is Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Jacob Hacker.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Ian.
And in terms of the making the rich richer and turning the back on the middle class, at this point with the shutdown of government, the Republicans and particularly the Tea Party activists are turning their back on almost all of America. And then if this crisis continues, as Paul Reiner says, they want to use the debt ceiling limit as a forcing mechanism. So it's not like it's that the shutdown's going to end before the debt crisis comes up on October the 17th. And if they go over that cliff too, aren't they going to make the rich less rich? I mean,
this is striking. The business community is really, at this moment, I think the technical way of describing it is freaking out about what's happening, because I think there was a sort of general complacency among elite commentators and observers about what would happen when the government, the continuing resolution to fund the government was up for debate. I think ultimately there was a sort of sense that, the Republicans will finally relent. You know, they've voted so many times to repeal the health care law, they haven't been able to do it. They'll finally relent. But they haven't. And, you know, we don't know. The shutdown and the debt ceiling crisis are separate, and they're deeply linked in terms of the issues at stake. But it's possible the shutdown could end, and we would still be in the same crisis with the debt ceiling that we're facing. So the commentary coming out is not promising. John Boehner does not have a strong position, and it seems as if the sort of Tea Party Republicans within the caucus are really running the show right now. And so it's not looking good for this crisis to come to a close. And it is a crisis for the middle class. It's a crisis not only because, having government closed is bad. You know, nobody thinks it's a great idea to run a government this way. And we haven't had a shutdown since the big fights of the 1990s, and everyone agreed in retrospect that that was terrible. But it's a crisis for the middle class because it's just a sign of how dysfunctional American democracy is, and we've got a lot of challenges facing the middle class, and we really need a government that can act effectively to address those challenges.
And there was a meeting on Wednesday evening at the White House with Boehner, Mitch McConnell, Harry Reid, and Nancy Pelosi. With the president, they were given a briefing on the havoc that the current shutdown's causing and the even worse havoc that the default on the debt will cause. The president's already cut short his ASEAN summit trip to Malaysia and the Philippines. But Boehner seems to be digging his heels in. He said there is no way Congress can or should pass, they're talking about the debt ceiling bill, such a bill without spending cuts and reforms to deal with the debt and deficit. Now, the deficit's going down at record levels. I mean,
I believe it's coming down the fastest it has since the years after World War II. I mean, the same storyline is being told by congressional Republicans, even though the reality has completely shifted since the last debt ceiling fight. The deficit is coming down quickly, too quickly, I think, for the strength of the economy. The other thing to note is that if you look at the numbers, the discretionary spending, that is all spending that is not mandatory, like Social Security, discretionary spending totals that are in the current Democratic-supported continuing resolution are much lower than was envisioned even a year ago. To the extent that there has been movement in the direction of compromise, it's mostly been Democratic movement in terms of bringing the discretionary spending levels down. I think there's just now the roadblock is that Republicans, and particularly this small but powerful faction of very, very conservative Republicans, are just saying that they will not legislate, they will not pass a budget until they, extract their pound of flesh from the Affordable Care Act, what they call Obamacare. And, I think the president at this point has rightly said that there's no basis for negotiation if you're talking about debilitating a law that has been passed by Congress, you know, upheld in large part by the Supreme Court, and has been implemented, and is, you know, key provisions that are being implemented right now. So it's, you know, I think this is really a sort of point where there aren't grounds for compromise, and the only question is whether or not the Republicans will realize that, you know, that this is causing both a huge amount of damage to the economy. And, you know, I do think that they can survive this. I think that a lot of them are very insulated, particularly the ones that are making the demands. But this is clearly Americans see this as more caused by Republicans than by Democrats or the president. And so the overall standing of Republicans is certainly being hurt by what's going on. Perhaps not enough to change course, but we'll see how people respond as this shutdown continues.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Jacob Hacker, who is the director of the Institution for Social and Policy Studies at Yale University, where he's also a professor of political science. And his latest book with Paul Pearson is Winner Take All Politics: How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. So given that you have this phenomenon of low information voters supporting these radical candidates in these largely rural districts, and obviously then they may not have a sophisticated understanding of economics, but at some point or other, when are they going to start feeling the pain, do you think, and realizing that the gap between rhetoric and reality here, particularly one on the deficit, which is a myth now, or at least it's completely overblown, and two, on the idea that if you screw with the full faith and credit of the United States, you're doing untold damage to this country, because it is the gold standard in terms of where people around the world want to park their money. And if America looks like an unsafe place to put your money, then the catastrophe is enormous.
Well, the first thing I'd say is that I am not sure that the voters about whom the conservative Republicans are worried are low information. They may be wrong in their views, but they're very intense, and their views are ginned up by organized political forces, the Koch brothers' money and the like, and as well as by the sort of media bubble that is epitomized by Fox News but includes talk radio. So, you know, I think that the sort of swing electorate, if you will, that is the larger swath of people who are not committed to this really conservative set of views about government, that group has really little information. I think that's absolutely right. And I was struck, the polling shows, you know, that yes, the Republicans are seen as to blame, but actually that's shifted in favor of the Republicans a little bit, according to some of the recent polls. Now, it was before the shutdown. But more telling, I think, is that there's more support for the idea that you should use the debt ceiling for leverage on spending cuts than there is for shutting down the government to try to stop the Affordable Care Act. And that, given what you just said, is absolutely true, that the debt ceiling would be a far graver threat to our economic standing and future, that there are a lot of people out there who don't understand it is worrisome. And I think the reality is that the media is part of the problem here, that a lot of journalists have been reporting on this. And, obviously I exclude you, Ian, from this group. You've been really on top of it, have been reporting on this as if we're talking about sort of equal blame, or at least, you know, a serious amount of blame on the, you know, equal blame on both sides, or a serious amount of blame on the Democratic side. But I mean, this really is, as we write about in Off Center, Paul Pearson and I, this is really an example of asymmetric polarization, where the right has moved dramatically from the center. It is broken established norms. It is playing what Mark Tushnet, a law professor, calls constitutional hardball. And we're basically we've reached a constitutional crisis. It's a constitutional crisis for two reasons. One is that it suggests the difficulty, if not impossibility, of having governance in our constitutional system when you have one party that is acting as if it operates in a parliamentary regime, and that it can use every available means including putting the entire economy at grave risk to achieve what it wants. And it's a constitutional crisis, too, because what's going to happen if we breach the debt ceiling, right? I mean, we have to honor our debts. We have to pay legislated benefits. And, you know, that's going to be you know, there's a lot of debate among constitutional scholars about what the president should do. But needless to say, whatever is done, it's going to violate some important aspect of our understanding of how our government should work. And, you know, this is really bad. It's worse than the shutdowns of the mid-90s because of the fact that it's coupled with this debt ceiling fight. And the debt ceiling fight is really about the Republican intransigence and willingness to break established norms, and in doing so, create enormous potential havoc in the world economy. So for ends that I think, you know, have relatively small support once you get down to the sort of clear understanding of what's at stake.
But it seems to me, though, Jacob Hacker, that what the Republicans and the, you know, the extremists that are pushing them further to the right, the Tea Party caucus, what they're expecting of Obama, and they clearly have contempt for him, and it's difficult not to see a kind of racist component in this, but essentially what they're asking for is constitutional surrender. And if he were to surrender, that would create havoc with the separation of powers and the future of the presidency.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, one question is, to what extent could this have been prevented if back in 2011 the president had simply refused to bargain? You know, there was months of trying to reach the so-called grand bargain back when Republicans pulled the same trick. And Republicans say, well, there's been fights about the debt ceiling in the past. There's been nothing like what happened in 2011, and certainly nothing like what's happening today. And, you know, the president did open the door for that to occur again by negotiating, essentially, with the hostage takers and taking the economy hostage. This time, he can't negotiate. I mean, I think they understand that. I talked to someone who worked inside the White House, and they said, you know, we're throwing the steering wheel out the window. You know, the classic game of chicken. We're throwing the steering wheel out the window, right? You know, we cannot do this. We are not going to deviate from this course. And I don't know if the Republicans fail to believe that, or if they just don't care. And either way, it's very troubling.
Well, just in closing then, the GOP's representative in New York, from New York, Peter King, in talking about the Tea Party caucus, he said, they live in these narrow echo chambers. They listen to themselves and their Tea Party friends. That keeps them going, forgetting that the rest of the country thinks we're crazy. Is there a chance that this endangered species of traditional or moderate Republicans, not that Peter King himself is particularly a moderate, but he's apparently at least sensible, is there a chance that they can break the impasse? Is there anything to work with in terms of the middle or what's left of the middle in the Republican Party?
You know, it's very hard. And I think we should all understand what's going on here. I mean, this is a long-term transformation of the Republican Party. It's been going on for a generation. And the conservative, what were once the conservative members of the party are now widely considered moderates. I mean, many Republicans themselves admit that, you know, Ronald Reagan wouldn't be able to be a standard bearer in the current party. And it is morphed from the sort of long-term transit into this really ugly situation in which all of the Republicans are looking over their shoulders, worried about organized primary challenges. And, you know, it's partly the flip side of their electoral protection, right? So the extent the Republicans have drawn districts and used money and obfuscated their positions in ways that mean that they're not particularly challenged, you know, we do know that voters are now more likely to vote with their party than they used to be. So these Republicans and Democrats in many districts, too, are pretty safe. But what happens in the Republican districts and doesn't happen in the Democratic districts is those primaries, which are Republican only, become a kind of battleground for the most insurgent conservative portion of the party. And it struck fear into the hearts of many Republicans. And so that's a strong incentive for these guys. And where will this – I mean – right now, Boehner could pass a continuing resolution, a budget, without any of these objectionable provisions with Democratic support. There's no question about that. But he would no longer be Speaker, right? And at the same time, it seems as if there are a bunch of Republicans who are skeptical but willing to go along. And I don't know how that changes. My guess is it happens through through a process where, you know, basically it only, or I would say it only happens if there's significant backlash. And the business community is important here. And I do think the business community is finally waking up to how dangerous this is. But the backlash is going to have to be broad-based. It's going to have to be sustained. And you know, some of the factors I was talking about earlier, about the echo chamber and about the degree to which these Republicans are really looking over their shoulder toward primary electorates, make it hard to reach the members who really have to switch. So let's stay tuned, but it's certainly not pretty to watch in the world's greatest democracy.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Jacob Hacker.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Jacob Hacker, who's a professor of political science at Yale University and the director of the Institution for Social and Political Studies. He's an expert on the politics of U.S. health and social policy, and he's the co-author of Off-Center, The Republican Revolution and the Erosion of American Democracy. And his latest book with Paul Pearson is Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking with one of the authors of a new study that indicates that the war on drugs is a complete disaster.